Welcome to Respond to Resilience, along with my co-host, Dr. Stacey Raymond and Bonnie Rumely, LCSW, EMTB. I'm David Dashinger. On this episode, we'll be speaking with Dr. Ken Hoffman, Doctor of Acupuncture and Chinese Medicine and Medical Director of Sophia Natural Health Center in Brookfield, Connecticut. Our topic, acupuncture and emotional energy management for anxiety, depression, and PTSD. We'd like to invite you to like and subscribe to our YouTube channel, Respond to Resilience. We're on Facebook under Responder Wellness Inc. We're also on bbsradio.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and our website is respondertv.com. We'll be right back with Dr. Ken Hoffman after this.
In this family, more of us die by our own hands than by the hazards of the job. In this family, up to a quarter of 911 dispatchers have symptoms of PTSD. In this family, our mental health and wellness are in crisis while responders are quietly suffering. In this family, many struggle with job-related stress, burnout, trauma, sleep disruption, substance abuse, and marriage problems. In this family, we can help the helpers with vital information and resources, resilience strategies, and success stories of overcoming the obstacles. In this family, no one is alone. Welcome to Respond to Resilience with co-hosts retired Lieutenant David Dashinger, Dr. Stacey Raymond, and Bonnie Rumely, LCSW, EMTB.
And I'd like to welcome Dr. Ken Hoffman to Respond to Resilience. Real quickly, get into his bio, and then we'll let Ken talk about his experience and what he does as a functional medicine practitioner. Dr. Hoffman's been in practice for 20 years. He received his doctorate from Pacific College of Health and Science, where he now teaches new doctors in clinical management and case study review. He's a U.S. Army veteran, an active EMT in his town, an avid adventure motorcyclist, and a naturalist. Along with his medical and admin team, his clinic, Sophia Natural Health Center, delivers the most comprehensive scientific holistic evaluation and treatment that is designed to find and treat the root cause of health problems. Welcome to Respond to Resilience, Ken.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm super excited to be here.
Well, great. Let's dive in. Have a great conversation. Bonnie, would you like to lead off?
Sure. I was really intrigued in your journey in the Army. Could you talk a little bit more about that and how it led you to functional medicine and EMS?
Yeah, that's a great story. You know, everybody's always like, oh, you're a Renaissance man because they've done everything. You know, I kind of break my life into two different sections. The first section of my life was I joined the military when I was very young. I was 17. I was a combat Army veteran, airborne, you know, airborne trained, and did that. Went from that and transitioned into being a corporate bodyguard, where I was actually part of I was an MRT for any of your listeners out there that remember when that existed. And I was part of the medical team for a Fortune 500 executive and owned a martial arts school. So that was my whole like first part of my life, the whole high adrenaline, excitement driven kind of life. But then I transitioned and ended up going back to school, which David talked about. It's a 6-year program, clinical internship, which I did at St. John's Riverside Hospital, focusing specifically on functional medicine, which is really about dealing with the root cause of health issues by looking at the frame of the body and how it's malfunctioning, and then successfully changing that to a healthy body using natural therapies, things like acupuncture or herbal medicine, diet therapies, lifestyle therapies, all of these things in such a way that, you know, we can bring people back to health. And I've been doing that for about 20 years now. I'm relatively new to the EMT world, but, part of what I do is I've got a lot of time to work up patients and to work with them. And I wanted to get back into not only just serving my town, but being able to, you know, just kind of drive my skills a little bit more on the EMS side. Also, and David mentioned that I'm a avid adventure motorcycle rider. My buddies don't know much about medicine or EMS or EMT or anything like that. And so when we're out in the woods in the middle of nowhere, I thought, well, somebody's got to learn how to patch these guys up.
So you get to carry the first aid kit.
Exactly. So that's kind of how the whole thing evolved. I feel like I've had two lives within my life. So
what is how is functional medicine different than the traditional medical approach, but also like being a naturopath? How mm-hmm. is functional medicine different than being a naturopath also?
Well, you know, I think that naturopathic medicine and functional medicine probably are very similar terms.
Right.
At the root of it is really that. Well, let me step back a minute. So, conventional medicine really looks at a disease process. So, you're getting lab work, you're getting an evaluation. They're really looking for something that's very concrete in the body. Functional mm-hmm. functional medicine is looking more at malfunction. So how has the body been interrupted from functioning optimally? Because what is optimal health? Optimal health is feeling happy every day, having lots of energy, sleeping well, digesting properly, having a generally positive outlook on life. That's what a healthy body is. So mm-hmm. functional medicine looks at, why is that not that state? Right. Why is it that somebody has chronic disease over time? Because the body does heal itself. So why would somebody have chronic pain for years and years? Why would there be some kind of, you know, diabetes or whatever it might be? And so functional medicine really looks at, how do we correct that? How do we correct the body back to its natural state? And naturopathic medicine does a very similar thing. I don't think there's a lot of difference. I think mm-hmm. MDs who do functional medicine would call them functional medicine doctors. Naturopathic physicians who are licensed in the state of Connecticut would call themselves naturopathic physicians. So, okay. There's a lot of crossover in the two.
So, Ken, with all the tools you have at your disposal as a functional medicine doctor, is there evidence to support the effectiveness of those tools like acupuncture?
Oh, there's a tremendous amount of evidence, David. I mean, if you just did something like went to the Natural Library of Medicine and put in whatever condition, natural solutions, you would have literally tens of thousands. Now, I do know the acupuncture world very well. There's over 50,000 research sightings in the National Library of Medicine on acupuncture. Right now, the Army, the Air Force and the Navy all use acupuncture in the battlefield. And they're also teaching this to nurses, teaching acupuncture for PTSD and traumatic brain injuries in the hospitals. So there's a lot of evidence to support all of this. One of the challenges right now is because we're using multiple kind of tools to help somebody, it doesn't fit into the research model all that well. You know, in research, you want to know, what's the substance that's making this thing better? Well, the problem is that if I see a patient that says, you know, suffering from fatigue, I might be doing acupuncture, giving them some supplementation, teaching them some body exercises, changing their diet slightly because I'm looking to get the result. And so unfortunately, while you can look up all of these things in research, for example, if you look up St. John's wort, you can find lots of research. You look up CBD, you know, cannabidiols, you can see lots of research. The problem is bringing it all together for the patient. But the evidence does exist.
Well, my burning question is, do you work with first responders?
Oh, absolutely. You know what? And it's great being in a volunteer organization now is I'm like secretly getting them all to come to me. Little by little, I'm working my way in because, you know, first responders can be very resistant to treatment. You know, we all think we're super tough and we don't. You know, we're going to kind of, you know, we're going to handle it on our own. You know, like I had one, it's one of those things. So I definitely work with first responders and I'm also enrolled in the VA. So, you know, we treat veterans as well. So I've treated a tremendous amount of veterans because we get it covered. You know, we get it covered under the Veterans Administration practices. So that's been really good too. But I definitely work with all of these people. Typically, what I like to do is most of them are going to come with some kind of complaint that's more related to I have chronic pain. Like paresthesia is very common in police officers, and that's the pain that comes from wearing the heavy duty belts all the time. Mm-hmm. So paresthesia and low back pain is a very common thing. So they'll come in with that. And then all of a sudden, because we take a more holistic approach and we're looking at the whole body, all of a sudden all these other things start coming up, like all of a sudden they're having sleep problems or they're having anxiety problems that they haven't talked to anybody about.
Sure.
So all of a sudden all these other little things start coming out. Mm-hmm. But yes, I like working with this population because once you can get beyond that wall, that barrier towards them accepting help, they're great people to work with. So yes, I do.
Good. The referrals will start flowing soon.
I hope so. You know, and yeah, I certainly hope so. You know, for me, it's very satisfying because it's a group that I'm not separated from. I'm not talking from a theoretical model. I'm working in EMS as well. And, you know, I've gone through all the high adrenaline activities and still do that, you know, that first responders do. So I feel like, you know, I can relate. And I'm not talking theoretical. And then, of course, 17 years of treating and seeing the results we can get, you know, I feel confident in what we do.
I unloaded 32 years of emotion.
This job isn't a joke, and it can hurt you.
How does yoga or meditation help with that?
Coming to terms with who you are.
You know, nobody calls us because they're having a good day.
It's really the suicide that becomes a huge issue.
People are more trustworthy with the dog.
Sleep deprivation helps them either be better or worse.
Completely secretive when we started this.
So it's pretty much taboo.
Take care of the people next to you.
First responders really being open about what they're struggling with.
If we know that, let's raise awareness.
Brings you together to talk about it, and it tells you you're not alone.
So I have a specific question. So sure. With regard to, say, because we see a lot of PTSD, post-traumatic stress injury, in first responders and veterans. How is your approach to that, and how is it different than what they are traditionally recommended to do with regard to their post-traumatic stress?
Yeah, this is a great question, Dr. Raymond, is that I think that the more traditional approach would be a medication approach. And then of course therapy. And while I don't do therapy, I leave that up to the professionals. I think that there is supplementary therapies that we can do that are not drug or medication related that will get the same results. So how I differ is that we're not going to recommend medication unless it's extremely severe. You know, if it's something that needs medication, of course, I'm not opposed to it.
Right.
But the goal is to exhaust all other avenues first.
Correct. Right. So what would you do? Someone comes to you and they don't necessarily, you don't think that they need pharmaceutical medication, but they fit the criteria for post-traumatic stress. What would you do?
Great question. So the first thing that I would do is I would actually I would work up the patient, the whole patient from beginning to end, because I think that there is a very physiologic reason why these things sustain. So we would evaluate, let's say maybe do hormone profiles, nutrient profiles. We would look at things like the adrenal gland function and nervous system function. I actually have some tools in my office for evaluating whether somebody's in that parasympathetic, that relaxation mode, or the sympathetic, the fight or flight mode, and where are they living? Are they living in that sympathetic overload, or are they living in that parasympathetic overload? I have a tool in my office for looking at that.
Yeah.
So really, in a nutshell, first let's look at you as a whole being, not just PTSD, not just the events, the events that led to that. So that's the first thing we do. Then from there, I would apply treatment. And one of the most effective treatments for PTSD is definitely acupuncture. So I might do a course of acupuncture to start with. And then whatever deficits we might see, like adrenal dysfunction is another thing. All of the hormones related to the adrenal glands, those stress glands of the body, we might support those with nutrients and supplements. And there's a variety of different things you can do for that. B complex, vitamin C, you know, reducing caffeine and, you know, reducing the load on those adrenal glands. All of that stuff can help. And then, of course, I might have, you know, of course, you'd have them see somebody like you as well. And also do things like heart math and earthing is another great thing that I like to use. You may have, I don't know if you've heard of earthing.
Earthing. Yeah. Like, okay.
Yeah, and interestingly enough, earthing has a lot of science behind it. Steven Sinatra, an award-winning cardiologist, did a lot of studies on earthing. And basically what it is, I mean, for a nutshell for your listeners, is it's basically getting your feet grounded to the Earth's magnetic field. Ironically, is that we're so separated from that, we get this buildup of electrons which agitate our nervous system. So by reducing that, by getting grounded, they've actually found that relaxes the nervous system, lowers blood pressure. So I actually prescribe it. go outside and take your shoes off. It's pretty simple. Right. Yeah. But they also have earthing mats and other things you can do to ground yourself. So really what I would do is put together a treatment plan that would combine multiple different therapies to hit it from a lot of different directions. Mm-hmm. And that's what I do. And I think that's why we get results. So
to go back to the acupuncture just for a minute, it seems to me like the acupuncture is going to help, what you said, calm down the central nervous system as well.
Right.
And then maybe it hits along those certain pathways in the brain that can help do that. Is that kind of along the lines of what you think?
Of what it does? Yeah, there's been a tremendous amount of study about how does acupuncture actually work. And so after doing this for 20 years, I've come to the conclusion that it actually works on different levels. The nervous system is one. What it does is it can reduce the sympathetic overload on the system and re-regulate the nervous system. But it also has an effect on things like endogenous opioids and other endogenous hormones that the body can produce itself. A lot of people don't know that things like morphine, which, you know, the first responders will know a lot about, is that the body can produce five times the amount of morphine that you can get from taking the drug. You just have to activate the system that does it. It does it naturally and very healthily. So, you know, acupuncture seems to do that. There's some recent studies that actually show that acupuncture also stimulates something called the ECS system, the endocannabinoid system, which is why people do things like medical marijuana. But that it'll activate your CB2 receptors, so it'll give you that same kind of relaxation response as things like CBD. So there's a lot of different levels in which it works, and then reduces inflammation and pain, and it's got some anesthetic properties as well. All this has been studied. Dr. Niemowitz, I think his name is, who started Battlefield Acupuncture, has a tremendous amount of information on this on the web, where he's training medics, field medics, to do acupuncture for things like pain, et cetera. But they have a ton of studies to support that. That's how I think it works.
Super interesting. And speaking of acupuncture, I was reading that you set up an acupuncture center at Sandy Hook, along with your state organization, after the shootings there. So what were you able to contribute to the well-being of that community through acupuncture?
Yeah, that was probably one of the profound kind of experiences in my life. And that was the ability to take what I've been studying and working with on an individual basis with patients for years and be able to apply this in a way that people really needed the help. And so there were two things that happened. We set up an acupuncture clinic right down in Sandy Hook, where people could come in and get more of a group acupuncture treatment. And so they would come in on their own. We were there for, I don't know, gosh, a couple months, I think. Mm-hmm. And they'd come in, and we were using primarily auricular acupuncture, which is the ear-based acupuncture, which is the one that's the Battlefield acupuncture as well. And then, you know, giving guidance towards, you know, places, you know, people locally. The challenge that I had with that was we didn't see as many first responders as I wanted to see. It had to do with, I believe it had something to do with some of the liabilities and some of the challenges that they had dealing with their unions and things like that. So there was some politics involved where they couldn't go to a general community clinic, but had to be seen by people within their network. Unfortunately, I didn't see as many during that time that I really wanted to. I did have the opportunity to also do some sessions at the middle school with the teachers as well, just a couple of weeks afterwards. And that was fun too. I've never treated so many people at one time, but I did like 45 acupuncture treatments all at the same time.
Wow.
And what was cool about it was they were all in a room together. And I will never forget this experience because they all came in like this frenetic, like da 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 da, you know, they're all like five.
Right.
And then I did the acupuncture treatments, and you could visibly see that like the whole room just went,
wow. Yeah.
And then everybody was quiet. They didn't feel like they had to talk to each other, and they just kind of, some of them closed their eyes, and it was this sense of peace that I don't think that they had experienced since the shooting. And it was palpable, and it was one of the experiences of my lifetime that I'm very grateful to have been a part of. So it was fun, in that way to be able to experience that and profound. So That's kind of what we did down there. We stayed down there until people stopped coming into the clinic, and then we just kind of closed it out. So that's how it all worked down there. But it was great.
Wow.
Yeah.
Fairfield County Trauma Response Team is a nonprofit alliance of mental health professionals dedicated to helping first responders heal from trauma, tragedy, and stress. We help as they manage community crises and the everyday demands of ensuring public health and safety. Established in 2011, FCTRT was formed in response to a call for emotional help from the Stamford Fire Department after a traumatic fatal fire. Less than a year later, the Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting occurred, and members again served the first responder community. Most recently, COVID-19 created a need for our support. We provide free educational presentations, pro bono sessions to deal with community disasters, and an extensive referral service to trauma-informed psychotherapists. If you're a responder in Fairfield County and need help dealing with duty-related stress, please reach out to us so you can continue to do the job you love. Visit our website at fctrt.org or find us on Instagram at Fairfield County TRT.
You know, something that Stacy and I talk about all the time and we see in our practices, you know, people want to come in and they want to feel better quickly and they want to know how to do it, right? And often what we say to them is it's a multi-pronged approach, and you're validating that here because mm-hmm. you're saying it's not just speaking to someone. It may not be just medication, but we need to look at all of these things, your diet, mm-hmm. your sleep. We've said this on multiple podcasts, but I think what you're saying just validates it. That any number or combination of these things can foster that kind of change. And I think especially in first responders, to have something tangible mm-hmm. that they could do immediately, that's physical, that they can feel in their body. I think that's why it's so important. And that's why we see it work so quickly.
Mm. And you know, I think, Bonnie, kind of following up on that, is that I also think that they – I look at life as yin and yang after studying this medicine for so long. One of the things is that you have, for example, talk therapy where you're helping people work through these issues. I think that it's very valuable, but if physiologically the body's fighting that, it's going to cause a resistance. So if your adrenal glands are depleted and all of those stress hormones are completely mm-hmm. depleted, mm-hmm. your body's going to be fighting to try and normalize. And at the same time, vice versa too, if you're not able to manage yourself emotionally, then even if you fix it physiologically, but you can't manage yourself emotionally, you're not going to get a good effect either. So there's a synergy that happens when you're dealing with the mind and the body, and spirit, and the spirit too, the mind, body, and spirit. You know, it's a overused phrase, but it's absolutely true when you're managing a patient. And so that's why I see my outside therapists and all that as extremely valuable to the work that I do. Because I can't do it without them. And honestly, I feel like they can't do it without me. mm-hmm. All right. So
I had one more question. Sorry to cut you off, Stacy. Right. Just one more question about, are you familiar with EMDR therapy?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Okay.
Can you speak a little bit to the holistic piece of what you do in EMDR and how that may go together?
Well, I don't do EMDR in my clinic. I'm familiar with it, but I don't practice it. Holistically, what it's and I believe that the roots of EMDR and I believe EFT and some of those other tools, I think, were actually based on meridian therapy. At the core of it, I might be wrong. I mean, I'm kind of, you know, I'm familiar with it, but I'm not, you know, I'm probably not an expert on it at all. Mm-hmm. But what it does is, because what we're doing is, again, we're normalizing physiology. The meridian system in acupuncture says that there are certain points on the body that actually, when activated, will stimulate other areas of the body. You know, the way I explain it to patients is it's very similar to flicking a light switch on the wall. It turns the light off over here. We have to remember that our bodies work like that. So when we're doing any kind of therapies where you're using acupressure or movement or some kind of body therapy, you're actually stimulating the movement of activity through those particular pathways that I don't think we quite understand yet. But EMDR, again, very it's been well studied. EFT has been well studied. You know, and then the acupuncture component is just because that's my wheelhouse. So Yeah, I there is the holistic part about it is, again, you're normalizing the body. So, and people get immediate relief. I had mentioned, I think it was with you, David, before we started, was I was reading, or I might have mentioned it here already, that I was reading an NIH study with, where acupuncture worked with our acupressure. And I think, I think they were talking about EFT in particular, was it is that within 4 to 10 or 12 visits, you're getting, you know, a tremendous response in things like PTSD. So, yeah. You know, I think it's because it speaks to that holistic component.
How is dealing with veterans and first responders different in your eyes than the general public?
Well, being both, I know that we're kind of closed off a little bit at first. There's some trust issues around civilians. Whether it's warranted or not, you know, that's beside the point. So being able to open ourselves to get help is sometimes a challenge. There's a perception that we should be able to handle it, we should be tough about it. And it was interesting because I often say to my staff, I say, you know, first responders, you know, they're not treated like veterans, but they should be, because they're seeing a lot of the horrible stuff that a veteran might see, or a combat veteran might see. And I think that it's kind of one of those overlooked areas. So the challenges that we have is that even society kind of says, well, you know, they kind of ignores that actually exists. So maybe the first responders, at least what I perceive, is that they're like, well, you know, I should be okay. And I think that that's not always the case. So I find that it's a little bit, there's a lot more barriers to getting through to them. So, but once you do, and they realize the benefit of what you can do, I'd find that veterans and first responders tend to be exceedingly loyal. Like, they won't go anywhere else. Like, you go, like, I try, like, I'm like, listen, you don't need me anymore. And they'll be like, no, I'm coming in. I'm coming today. So there's a loyalty, and there's a family component, but you have to break through that barrier first. And that's what I found in my practice with dealing with veterans and first responders. And once you do, then you've got a great patient, and they understand, you know, how we're helping them. And then there's also, you know, in alternative medicine, you have that whole, I mean, that's just from the general population, thinks that it's a bunch of woo-woo. And it's absolutely, with the day and age, with the amount of research and science that we have, it's completely unwarranted, but that still is out there, you know, like, oh, acupuncture is voodoo medicine, or whatever it might be, or, you know, supplements don't work. That's just not the case, but you have to break. So there's these different barriers you have to break through. And I think with veterans and first responders, you just have a little bit, you have a couple more layers to go through.
Well, here's a topic that we've seen kind of great interest in, and that has to do with alternatives to prescription medications and how one can handle some of the challenges of sleep, depression, attention deficit, some of the things that responders are dealing with, and sometimes turning to prescription meds for that. What do you offer, or what are some of the alternatives that could be used alongside or in place of?
Well, that's a great point, David. And you know, I think the first thing that I would say is that if somebody is going to use something like some alternatives, like herbs or supplements, they should be very cautious with mixing that with any kind of medication, because sometimes these herbal therapies will actually duplicate medication. And so you could get into some problems. The second part about it is that the right dosing, the right product, and the right at the right times is very important. And you won't get the same results as you will if you have somebody, a professional who knows what they're doing, to help give you the right amounts. You know, CBD oil is a common, something that's very common. It's been out there now. And a lot of people don't know how to dose it or how to deal with it. Doctors don't even, I mentioned earlier, their endocannabinoid system, which is part, is something that physicians aren't even taught in medical school. So how is the general population going to know about this? So, you know, that there are a variety of things, but you got to be careful and make sure you're taking the right thing. But CBD oil, again, is great for anxiety. However, if you're a first responder, if you're on the job, you can't have anything with THC in it, because you're going to start coming up positive on your tests. They do make broad spectrums where they've removed all the THC, and I use that with my first responders. But there's also dosing issues, because everybody's endocannabinoid system is a little bit different. You got to dose it appropriately. So if you don't, it won't work. So there's a dosing threshold. So, you know, I think CBD oil is something that's really good. You know, and, you know, there's also other solutions, like aromatherapies have been shown to be very, very effective. And that's using things like lavender, lemon balm. I know I spent some time in the Orient. I actually did an internship in China. And I spent a lot of time in the temples over there. And so for me, I have a trigger back to a relaxation response from sandalwood, because they burned it in all the temples. So like whenever I smell sandalwood, I'm like, you know, the olfactory sensation is very powerful. Yeah. So you can entrain a relaxation response with aromatherapies.
Yep.
As far as anxiety is concerned, magnesium, B complex, also regulating blood sugar. I find that a lot of people who have difficulty sleeping, it's about regulating blood sugar. They'll wake up in the middle of the night, but it's actually a reactive hypoglycemia. They're getting low blood sugar and it's spiking their sympathetic response. So regulating blood sugar is important. For depression, you have things like 5-HTP. Your omega-3 fatty acids are critical. Most people don't know that our brains are fat. Yeah. You know, 80% of the brain is fat. And the American diet tends to be very deficient in the good oils, the good omega-3 oils. And so what happens is that the ability of the nervous system to respond quickly for that relaxation versus stress response goes away if you're deficient in essential fats. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then there's melatonin, which people probably know a lot about for sleep. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Melatonin is effective, but people have to keep in mind it is a hormone. And if you take too much, it actually has an opposite effect. It'll actually stimulate you. So taking more is not necessarily better. Those are some of the solutions that I use. There's things we had mentioned, heart math. We had mentioned earthing. The other thing is there's weighted blankets. Weighted blankets is something that's very common for people.
Right.
But I think that it's worth using some of these supplements and nutrients because there's a lot of side effects from most of the prescription meds out there, your benzos and your SNRIs, and you know, all the stuff for DMTs, you know, we hear about your Valium and your Lexapros, you know, we see most of our patients are on that stuff. The problem with it is that, you know, there's the common kind of side effects of those medication are things like sexual dysfunction, decreased alertness, and even suicidal ideation can come from some of these medications. But the biggest thing that I see in the practice is most of these medications, they lose efficacy over time. That's the interesting part. It doesn't stick. Yeah. So it's not a long-term solution. So I'm not against that being a short-term solution. But at the end of the day, I think the long-term, they're going to end up on one of our doorsteps because the medications just don't resolve the problem.
Right.
So that's my take on these. I think some people need them. Again, part of my past history, I actually worked at Holbrook Hospital for 3 years, working on the psychiatric ward. So I've seen medications in the most extreme cases keeps people alive sometimes.
Sure. Right.
But I think that, you know, these solutions that I've talked about, I think are something. I mean, how what's the downside of taking magnesium? Your muscles are relaxed and you're going to feel better. It's good for you, and we're deficient in it anyway.
Yeah.
So a lot of these things don't, you know, if you come to me and you're already on a medication, I'm going to try and guide towards those things that don't have interactions.
Sure.
And I think CBD oil is generally pretty safe to take if you take the right dosages as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, things like B complex, vitamin B it helps to nourish the whole system. So, you know, those types of things. And a lot of times you can do blood tests to see whether you're deficient in these or not. But that's, those are in all of this, these are all the solutions that are non-pharmaceutical.
Right.
So why not exhaust that first is kind of my opinion.
Absolutely. Right. Right. And then you most likely avoid any, side effects. So mm-hmm. what do you do with people with, people that are self-medicating, you know, with alcohol and mm-hmm. Maybe too much marijuana?
Yeah, that's a good question too. I've had that in a lot. I've treated a lot of that.
Yeah.
I think that has to be a multi-pronged approach because you got an addiction component of that as well.
Yeah.
You know, that you're dealing with some, I can still work with people like that. And I have in the past. I think you have to be super cautious, you know, when you work with them. You know, I remember one story where I had a patient. They came in. They were pretty drunk, you know. And you have to, you know, I'm like, I can't treat you today. You know, I got to send you out. You know, then it's like you're calling their family to drive them home because you don't want them leaving your clinic drunk. And it's tough. But I think that you have to treat it as an addiction at that point, whether it's whether it's emotional or physiologic. There are some side effects of smoking too much marijuana. There's the whole cyclic vomiting syndrome, which nobody talks about, but I've seen it in my clinic. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've seen it, and it exists. So, you know, I try and just, you know, share with them that this is just you're self-treating, and it's not a long-term solution.
Right.
That's kind of how I've dealt with it in the past. And you know, obviously, there's the NADA protocols, which are used for opioid addictions. That's the National Association of Drug Addiction Protocols, which I believe at one point it was taught at Lincoln Hospital to therapists. And in Connecticut, therapists can do the NADA protocol for anti-anxiety and for addiction. And so MCCA, which is a place up here, mm-hmm. I've done some treatments there as well, which is we use the ear acupuncture, and we have seeds that we can put in that actually stay in there long term, and it's used, it'll reduce addiction. It reduces the urges, like that urge to use.
What do you mean seeds you put in there? What do you mean?
Yeah. So they're little tiny seeds, like they're vicarious seeds, and they're on a piece of surgical tape, and you put them on the ear in specific points for addiction, and then they press them, and it actually stimulates the acupuncture point. That's in the ear.
I see.
And so you can leave them in for, I don't know, I've left them in for a couple of weeks at a time.
The person can actually do them. They can massage that area themselves in order to decrease a craving.
Exactly. Exactly. Right. And yeah, like I said, the program was started back in the 70s at Lincoln Hospital.
Does it work for Tostitos? I have a problem at 7 o'clock, around 7 o'clock at night.
Well, listen,
there's no help. There's,
yes.
Okay.
I've used it for food stuff, too. It definitely works. But I don't know if you like your Tostitos.
I like them too much. That's the point. Anyway, I'll give you a call.
Okay. There you go. We'll put some ear seeds in, see what we can do. No problem.
Time for a research project.
So Ken, circling back to one EMT to another here, what are some of the gaps in tools to handle some of the traumatic incidents? What are your ideas for helping EMS providers specifically?
Yeah, great question. Again, because I think that this is an area that, especially in volunteerism, that, you know, you have people who become EMTs, and I don't think they always, like, I went into medicine knowing what medicine was about. I don't think all EMTs go into EMS knowing what they're going to see. You know, schooling is very different than showing up on, you know, on a cardiac case, something like an overdose. It's a whole different animal, and it gets ugly and it can get dirty. And I think that one of the challenges is that they don't really, I don't think they really see that that's coming. So now they're all of a sudden in this environment where they're expected to perform. And I think part of the gap may start even from the training. When I took my MRT class, and maybe it was the person I took it from, I remember seeing gruesome films.
Yes.
From the beginning. That's what they used to show. They used to show gruesome films. And I used to go, and, you know, it never bothered me. So I'd go home and I'd be at the kitchen table and my wife, I'd be like, look at this amputation. And she'd be like, oh, my God. Yeah. We've probably all done that. But
those are my favorite.
I know, right?
Nice.
But I kind of felt like what that was a desensitization. And yeah. By the time you get out of the program, you'd at least know that either this is right. for you or it's not. My daughter then took, you know, and then the whole COVID thing actually shut down a lot of the ride-alongs for EMTs. So I think that part of the gap is that I think that there needs to be a more experiential component of this so that people don't get into something that they maybe it's not for them. I think it starts from there. Then you go to the departments, and I think in the departments, I think that there can be, and again, we're all volunteers, and obviously in professional departments, they may have this, but I think that like what David talked about, which I'm very excited about, which is the peer response group, I think that each department should be linked into this kind of stuff so that you have a platform to vent from some of these calls. Mm-hmm. So those are my ideas of how to handle these traumatic mm-hmm. events, because as you all know, and I'm speaking to the choir here, is just having a platform to talk about this in a safe environment where you can just kind of like, wow, that really sucked, that call. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think is really helpful. And I think that the departments, with all of the busyness that goes on, it tends to be kind of shuffled more to the background. And I mm-hmm. think that should be brought to a little bit more prevalence. Maybe it's about creating an officer that deals with that. You know, in a volunteer department, maybe having a person that's assigned to, you know, running a peer response group or an after action reports and, you know, those kinds of things, which I think would be really good to have, or debriefings after, you know, tough calls. But what I found is that even debriefing after tough calls, remember that a lot of times, like I work nights because I like the nights. So I'm always volunteering at night in the ambulance. It might be me and one other person. They don't even know what we did. The rest of the department doesn't know, so they wouldn't know to do a debriefing if that particular person saw something crummy. So I think there has to be a process that's built into the departments to handle this. That would be my idea, just from my limited experience with departments right now. It might all exist, but right now what I see is that it would be really helpful to have somebody who's kind of, all right, you're in charge of this, and let's get some resources to people in some way. That's my thoughts about the gaps.
This is a little bit of a twist on that question, but sometimes in the back of the ambulance, I'll do grounding techniques with patients, you know, if they're particularly anxious or hypervigilant. But I was wondering, are there any things that you could think of for EMS providers that they could do in the back of that ambulance based on some of your principles?
Ooh, for you, for themselves or for the patient?
For the patient.
Ooh, What can we do within our scope?
That's what I mean. Is there a way to sort of draw on some of the things that you're aware of, whether it's biofeedback or grounding or some of those things? I thought you might have a couple of little ideas that people could use.
Yeah, that's actually, I'm going to think about this afterward as well. But one of the things that comes to mind immediately, and I've thought about this, Bonnie, is doing this, but being so new, I haven't really wanted to incorporate it yet. I'm like, you know, before I start causing waves, let me be around a while. Is things like, there's revival points, like, for example, that I really want to try, like do 20, this point right here above the philtrum is a revival point that's used in acupuncture when somebody's has syncope. So you can draw, if I had an acupuncture needle, I would needle it, but you can also use your thumb or a tool of something to stimulate that point. You know how we stimulate the sternum? You can stimulate that point and it'll help with revival and help bring the person back up. There's also acupuncture points where, for example, and I've been in there where the paramedic took over and the person, something like they have like ventricular tachycardia and they're just like gotten themselves all wound up. And, that's why they put the whole cold on the back of the neck. Maybe it's sometimes even stimulating some of those points in the back. Their gold letter 20, that area can actually relax the muscles and bring down, you know, get them back into rhythm. And there's some different acupuncture points. And this is why I'm going to think about this, because this would be a great like CU course. Mm-hmm. Would be like some points that you can use to help relax the body while you're transporting and maybe get a better outcome. But that's what I would do, is like just use manual techniques on these points to help relax. That's what I would think about doing.
Our mission at Responder Wellness, Inc. is to subsidize or provide free of charge safety equipment and wellness services to first responders, including police officers, firefighters, EMS personnel, and 911 operators throughout Connecticut. Resources include scholarships to train new EMTs, a responder and veteran-only AA group in Danbury, Connecticut, as well as police vests, a fire and EMS boot program, yoga classes, gym memberships, and t-shirts. The founder of Responder Wellness, Inc. co-leads a peer support group sponsored by Fairfield County Trauma Response Team. Responder Wellness, Inc. is a nonprofit 501c3. Find us on the web at responderwellness.org, on Facebook at Responder Wellness, Inc., or email us responderwellness@gmail.com. Responder Wellness, Inc., putting responders first.
It's probably a little more complicated for people to learn those acupressure points. And I've never been in the ambulance, but I know that if I'm sitting with somebody in therapy and they're beginning to hyperventilate or, you know, they're on the verge of panic, the slower cadence to the voice, you know, like just slowing your voice down, just listen to my voice, you know, there's the prosody effect of your voice can actually have a very soothing effect on their nervous system, right? The vagus nerve responds to just a very slow, I'm kind of imitating it right now. You know, there's nothing shrill about my voice, but I've helped people calm down just from that. I know that I have, if I've been with my kids and they're upset about something, I can have them lay on a couch, right? And so I'm thinking of like a patient in a, you know, in the back of an ambulance, and there's, you know, by tapping the shoulders, it has a very soothing, it's because it's so rhythmic, you know, I'm behind my son and I'm doing this tapping, which is very similar to, you know, kind of EMDR, you know, back and forth, calming, you know, it has a very calming, soothing effect on a person. The other thought I had was just something that if you can control your own heart rate variability. And so, gee, how do you do that? But this goes back to heart math, right? Yeah. So if you're familiar with heart math, great. If not, you can always look it up. But getting your own heart rhythm into a very coherent state where, you know, your blood pressure is going to be lower. There's going to be a coherent rhythm to your heartbeat. The electromagnetic field of the heart, and you know this, Ken, is it goes out about
6 feet.
6 feet from the body. So, you know, so there's like this circle, this 12-foot circle around us. So if anybody, if you're calm and you're, you know, you're slowing your breathing down, you're talking to the client, if you have to, you could always hold their hands or like I said, tap them gently. It could be their knees. If you ask their permission first, can I tap you? You can calm someone down because your heart rate variability, there's something called entrainment. Again, you know this, Ken, that the more coherent heart rate variability, that would be you, the clinician or the EMT or paramedic, is going to have a dominating effect on the person who is in incoherent heart rate. So they will entrain to you because the calmer person has actually a more intense effect on the person who is not calm. So just by showing up and being calm and talking calm, no, like, you know, it's not rocket science, you know, you can actually really impact a person. But if there is a CEU class on acupressure points on the ear or whatever, and you can calm a patient down in the ambulance, I think it's great.
Yeah. And, you know? And I think also heart math for first responders would be great. I mean, it's not a complex technique.
No.
And the other thing is that comes to mind is there's times when, and I've done this in the ambulance, is having somebody mirror my breathing because I'm not the paramedic. I've worked with one of the paramedics that I really like in our system that she and I work together really well, is she was doing all of the she was doing the management. She was putting in the IV. She was, you know, pushing the drugs, doing all that while I was managing the patient. The patient was looking at me and I had her start, mirroring me as I was going along. And so for EMTs, it's a great opportunity if you're in the back with two people, you know, one who's doing the care, the physical care, while you're doing the mental, emotional care. There's a real opportunity there, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
So
this might be the future of EMS. You know, more holistic things in the future.
Get them to the hospital; they're all set.
Yeah,
they're all chilled. Like, I'm ready to go now. I'm okay. I'm good. I'm good.
Right, you just have to drive around the block a few times and get a trip to the hospital. Dr. Ken Hoffman, this has been a fascinating, wide-ranging conversation. We've covered a lot of amazing topics. I'm sure we could go further, and maybe we will again sometime in the future. How can people get in touch with you or find you out there? What are some of the what's the name of your clinic, and where is it on the internet?
Okay, so I am in Brookfield, Connecticut. It's called Sophia Natural Medicine Center or Sophia Natural Health. You can find us at inm.center, and that'll tell you all about what I do. And you can find us on Facebook. You can find us, you can call my number at 203-740-9300. Again, but you'll find it all online. We do telemedicine. So even if you're out of the area, we can do a lot of these techniques and give you some counseling. And if you know the area, we're in Brookfield Medical Center, which is right down in the Four Corners area. And yeah, we'd be happy to help anybody we can.
Fantastic. It's so interesting you mentioned telemedicine, because some of the functional medicine doctors that I've met are doing that. Really, it's become a treatment modality where someone's, say, dealing with cancer and they're in Minnesota and you're in New York, you can help them on their cancer treatment journey just by doing some consults and guidance on online. And so it's a powerful tool. And so it doesn't have to be somebody that's can actually have physically be there, but you can guide them online as well. So
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, technology when it works is great.
Yep, it is. Well, again, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a great conversation, and I'm sure it's going to be valuable to our listeners. I'd like to remind everybody, like and subscribe on YouTube. We're at Responder Resilience on Facebook. It's Responder Wellness Inc. page. We're on BBS Radio, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and our website is respondertv.com. Thanks for joining us. Stay safe. Be kind to yourself. Take care.